up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Miss Matt Weber on the board. We also have Jack Silverman back by popular demand because Indiana's shut down. So in an effort to get out of the apartment, here he is. Jack, how are you, buddy? Welcome back.
Thank you.
Of course, I will have to say that... Jack is about 80% on the morning he comes in where it's pouring rain, and he brought his average right back up this morning on his first day. It's pouring out as we wander in, or he's drowned. Thank you for that, Jack. But anyway, just saying. S&P futures up 20, NASDAQ futures up 88, Dow futures up 140. Oil actually a bit of a rally here today, up 165 to 1399. That's the June contract again. Maybe later in the show I'll get the whole futures cantango out to next year, because you can't just buy that contract and hope that it goes to $30 next year, because this contract expires next month. So that's the problem with these futures. Kevin, you with us?
Yeah, I am. Sounds like everything's just peachy.
Well, we were up, as you were aware, did the show yesterday. The NASDAQ futures were up 130. They finished down like 120. So we were up 400 Dow points or something yesterday. Just to review, Dow ended up down 32, S&P's down 15, and NASDAQ down 122. So we had a very major reversal during the day yesterday. So the fact that we're back up some of that is it's better than being down, but it's also, we had a huge turn yesterday. We never got back at all. It's just if we finished really on our lows, which is not, if you're Mr. Technical, that's not a good sign, especially after a, you know, we'll see if we hold it today. So the Fed decision is today. The employment report, which usually comes out the first Friday in May, or first Friday of the month, doesn't come out, I don't think. Does not usually come out if the Friday's the first, so it'll be next week. So there you have it, Kevin. All kinds of crazy stuff.
Must be those uncertain times they keep talking about on the TV commercials.
Yeah, especially like the part where we're going to have this massive problem in the supply chain for meat, because the meat factories, because they've had some COVID issues, are closing. Plus the supply chain, like you say, Kevin, must just be screwed up. So Tyson and a few people are supposed to close these plants. So the order comes out of Washington that the president, despite problems with COVID in the plants, or, you know, whether they have them or don't, I don't know, but he's ordered them to stay open, to bring people back to work, which is interesting. It's probably the first time I've ever heard of a presidential order that says people must work if sick. I don't know if that's exactly what it said.
No, not if they're sick.
Okay. I'm just saying. But go to work somehow. So then, last night.
Well, I mean, that's a couple of things. One is it takes the liability off of Tyson.
Does it really?
It relieves that issue for what it's worth. But they also can, there's a lot that they can do to make it work out. So, you know, one is, you know, go from, you know, make sure you're running 7 days a week so that you can spread out the workers by spreading out their working hours. You can run longer hours than you have been running, so again, so that you can spread out the working hours to make it easier to spread out the workers. You can you can create more convenient living quarters for people. There's a whole bunch of things that they can do, and I don't know what Tyson is or isn't doing, but those are some of the things that other food processing businesses have done. So bring on additional workers too, and do signing bonuses, so that again you can have more people spreading out and working different hours. That's all doable. Whether they're doing it or not, I don't know. If they are doing that, is anybody reporting it? I don't know. I don't know what to make of it.
I don't either. I just it's kind of as you. You're not exactly the closet economist I am, but you almost get there by being your supply chain genius that you are. Isn't it, we've talked, God, Kevin, how long is this thing going on? You and I, Carl, everybody talks about how the economy is essentially an organism, right? And if it's not all working, it's hard to say anything.
Organism! Oh, I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so.
Never mind, bad joke.
Yeah, well, that's because I said something else the other day. I said sometimes I use.
I remember.
Yes. And yet I'm stunned. It's one of our guys who's supposed to be the smartest people, our people in Washington. Oh my God! What if the plants close? Well, duh. What do you think's going to happen when you got this thing all shut down like this? I mean, it's like the truckers got to keep driving. Wait a minute! You just closed down all the restaurants and stuff at all the truck stops. Oh, wait a minute! We got to let those open. Well, Kevin, we can go through this 1,000 times a day, right? You know, I mean, if this is open, they got to stay open. That's what our economy is all about.
How many times have we said that when you are making judgments on the fly, not prepared to make them, and often without the data you need to make them successfully, you're going to make a lot of bad decisions? It's just the way it goes. If we don't walk out of this with an initiative to be prepared, then I don't know. Then we are the stupidest human beings on the face of the earth.
Yes, but we're human beings, and we've always been that way. And all of a sudden, it's 10 years from now. How many people even remember? I mean, right?
Well, this one, I think people will remember.
All right, 20. I mean, it's not nobody. I mean. You have to really dig in the internet to find something about the 1918 one. Could happen any year.
That's not 10 years ago.
No, but what I'm saying is, but it, in terms of diseases, I don't know that a year or two makes a big difference with a disease. And it's, what I'm saying is, there is this, all the stuff from Homeland Security, the Patriot Act, all that stuff. We try and move 1,000 people out of some place. Can't do it. We don't have enough. None of that stuff's left. You think all the stuff we bought? You know, the Coast Guard boats they redid and everything, they sold those to South America. But we don't even have that stuff anymore. The only thing that left is 58,000.
And we also were foolish about the way we went about it. We created bureaucracy to address whatever concerns we had about travel. We just created bureaucracy and patronage jobs.
Yeah.
Which is what government does, and does very well.
I'd like to know, I mean, really, it's not like, I'm sure they, well, today they're not doing anything, but the Elizabeth Warren and her gang, when they created the, what is it, the Consumer Protection Bureau, or first of all,
yes, CFTC.
First of all, they couldn't get it through Congress, right? So didn't they fund it through the Fed? Did the Fed actually has to pay for that, which is not what they're supposed to be doing? I think I'm right on this, but I will check. But I think they're funded through the Fed, which no other organization in the government is, I don't believe, except the Fed, which is supposed to be the Federal Reserve Bank, supposed to be quasi-independent, right? But I think they fund this consumer protection thing. Now, should consumers be protected? And this is what you come with the bill. Sort of like the Patriot Act. Hey, you want your mom raped with a guy with a turban on his head? No, I don't.
Or it's the Patriot Act, so are you against patriotism?
That's right. Are you against patriotism? Are you against consumer protection? You don't think they should be protected against these big people? Well, sure I do. I mean, but wait a minute. Now, but we also have the Comptroller of Currency. We have the Federal Reserve. We have CPIC. We have all these other people that are supposed to be FDIC, all these people are, have organizations already that are charged with this job, right? Well, yeah, but they're not doing it, so we need somebody else. Well, wait a minute. Are we going to hire people out of the old place, smack them upside the head and say, you better work harder at the new place? Are we going to leave the old people, the old place with nothing to do and have a new place? I mean, what are we doing here, right? Nobody ever asked that question. So we hired 15,000 people. Now, you got to know, Kevin, how many computers that is. How many, we got to have a bureaucracy. You got to have human resources. You got to have, procedures for everything you do, right? So somebody's got to.
All of it, yep.
You got to have the whole routine. It probably takes you
gotta
2 years.
Got to have an accounting department. Got to have an IT department.
Oh, gotcha.
Gotta, you know, all of it.
The whole nine yards. Plus, we need a building. Plus, we need 15,000 desks.
Oh, you need multiple buildings.
Yeah, you need 15,000 desks, right? Or cubicles. Or I don't know if they use cubicles anymore. I guess they do. But, and all of a sudden, now at the end of the day, okay, you 15,000 people, go out and find a problem. Okay. I mean, it's laughable, Kevin. And yet it sounds so good to so many people when they do it. They make it sound great. I mean, it's absolutely laughable. You know, what are they doing now? Staying home somewhere, allegedly working and getting paid?
I would imagine they're considered non-essential.
But they're not fired as a federal employee. I mean, all government people are still getting paid.
Of course not.
They're all getting paid, right?
And will we ever ask the question, did we miss them?
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
when they were furloughed, did we miss them? Because if we didn't, then, you know, the next question is, so why are we continuing to do this?
Well, how many people, I don't know, how many people did you know or have heard from? And in Illinois here, let's put it this way, it's coincidental. I'm not going to say it's causative. I'm going to say it's coincidental. It'll be nice, even though it's like it rained down this morning. That more people I know got laid off late last week after Pritzker added another 30 days to the jail sentence than really at any time before. I think a lot of firms were willing to suck it up till the end of April and still pay people. And come another 30 days, indeterminate, maybe another 30, another 30, another 30 after that. They just said, screw it, these people got to go on unemployment. Right? And okay. When does that time come for the staff of the aldermen? When does that time come for the people at the Secretary of State's office that, you know, aren't manning any of these facilities? Can't go get your car tested. Why are they still getting paid? I mean, I don't want anybody to not get paid, but, I mean, what are we doing here? I had a reasonable debate yesterday with states being able to do, and I heard some on TV last night. It was vicious. States being able to declare bankruptcy. Kevin, what is so wrong? Not wrong about the bankruptcy part, okay? But what is so hard for people to understand? You and I were talking about this the other day. It's not what you say; it's what people hear. You can have 100 people come and sit in this room. Well, it'd be pretty crowded. Plus, God, we got the disease out there. And if they'll say a state can't go bankrupt. They have no idea what they just meant. And Brendan said the same thing yesterday. And Brendan is as bright as it gets. He said a state shouldn't be allowed to go bankrupt. But Brendan knows the difference between bankrupt and broke. Nobody else does.
Right, because you can still default.
Yeah, you still default. But then now what? Now you can't avail yourself of the U.S. bankruptcy law. That's all that means. It doesn't mean you can't go broke. But people now, bankrupt means broke, which doesn't even mean that way anyway. It could mean that you have all kinds of money, but you go looking forward, your debts are $5 million, and it looks like your income's going to be $3.5 million. You can declare bankruptcy then. You don't have to be broke. It is not a synonym at all. Yet people think it is. So you can, like, the guys in Indiana, Whiting, Whiting, their refinery, I don't know what they are, but they have all those tanks and they have the refinery over there. They declared bankruptcy 2-3 weeks ago. Stock's still trading like $12. They're you know, doing oil every day. And, they just said, look, based on the price of oil, it looks to us like, we've got, you know, $10 million worth of income and $20 million worth of expenses in the next 2 years. We might as well go there now and get them adjusted. And come out
of it. So in their case, they're choosing. They're not going to shut down the business. They're not going to dissolve the business. They just want to reorganize their debt.
Yeah. So that's what.
I don't think there's anything that would stop a state from attempting to do that.
It's federal law.
They need voluntary participation from their debtors.
No, but I'm saying
their creditors. I mean,
but once you're in bankruptcy court, there's an anvil on your head, you either come to an agreement or I will. If you're the bankruptcy judge, that's the hammer. Right? The best thing, the first day you walk in there is 10 creditors and there's Kevin O'Neill. The judge is going to say, tell you what, we're going to continue this for 30 days or 60 days, probably 90 days, and you guys come in here with a plan or else I'll make the plan, but nobody might not like that. It'd be better if you guys made it. It's the first thing he's going to say. Or she. So they all come in and they go, all right, we all took a 20% haircut. Here's the deal. And the judge goes, fine. Bang. I was a great judge. See ya. Right? Well, I mean, right? That's what they want to have happen.
Well, it is. And, you know, yes, it's exactly what you want to have happen. You want to guide people to some kind of an agreement that is going to work for everybody as best it can.
Right.
Given the current circumstances.
Right. And basically he says, if you expect me to take 4 weeks of my life going through and coming up with all these details myself, you may not like it and I'm not going to want to hear it. Right? Isn't that
it's just like being a mom or a dad.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's exactly right. Pretty much, you know, and the states and the people here don't want to be in that process. Because the pensioners, the judge might say, I don't care about your Illinois Constitution that says you got to pay these people, they don't have any money. Here's what I'm going to say. You cut all the pensions in half. That's what I'm going to say. So the last thing Illinois wants is to give up that power to a bankruptcy court. Now, what Illinois plans on doing the day the first check bounces, that I have no idea, Kevin. That's my concern. Because right now, I don't see... You know, there's a lot of people that are, everybody I know got laid off last week applied for unemployment. Well, they don't have any money. So what does that mean exactly? I mean, I know if I ever get my check, I don't know if I even get any, but say I did a small amount, I think it goes down if you made some dough last year. If I ever get my check, all I know, Kevin, am I the only person in the country that says, okay, here's a grand, guess what, I just owe the government another grand and I'm not getting anywhere. But I also know, that if everybody else gets one and I don't, I'm falling behind, which is crazy. Right?
Well, so, are you kidding? You probably don't get a check.
I don't think I do either. I don't know. I don't care.
So, yeah, everything about this is crazy. Now, I am sure that we will look back and we will see some really good decisions through this process, but we're going to see some really bad ones that we're going to have to live down for a long time.
Well,
just the way it is.
The idea of the non-economics of the system is, it, I don't know, Kevin, the people who are in charge, it's, when I was in grad school, the funny thing, the attitude at the University of Chicago was that if you come piling out of, you know, grad school and your first job is going to be some, you know, financial analyst or something. Then you're going to be a junior and then you're going to be a senior. That's why people love to go to work for Ford because they were so, organized. No, when I say organized such that should be your first job. Even if you didn't want to put up with living in Dearborn, Michigan for a year because they paid you essentially going rate, but they paid overtime on Saturday. And, so if you're a junior analyst and at the end of a year you became a senior analyst, you could then go get a job somewhere else and say, well, what did you make last year? Geez, I made 25 grand. Really? Okay, so we got to pay you like 28 at the new place, which now the 25 might have been 5 grand overtime, which, you know, you could count in those days. Plus you could ask somebody what they made at their former job in those days, which I don't know if you even can now. Or you're not.
Well, I think you can. I think you advise against doing it.
Yes,
you know, the problem with it, of course, is that if your pay was depressed, and let's just say, you know, it was inequitably depressed because maybe you're worried about discrimination or something like that. That by asking that question, you're basing your offer on what the previous salary was, so you're perpetuating an inequity.
Well, but the...
That, and that's why, you know, you shouldn't answer it. I don't know if it's legal to ask it or not.
Well, in response to...
I'm pretty sure it is.
All the females in the world that are all against this thing, how they always make less than the guys. And I'm going to say that there is definitely an inequity, probably, between what women make and what men make. But you're not alone. You're not special. ladies in that regard, because there was always an equity in what men made. It had been, basically, you got paid 10% more than you made on your previous job. So I mean, nobody knows this better than I do, because when I went to Pullman, two guys got hired basically the same week. Me and a guy named Mike Hansen, real nicest guy ever. He worked for Ford, did the thing, and I went to work for Allied Van Lines because I wanted to be in small business. So I was a small business consultant. I went from essentially independent owner-operator, city to city, and helped them out, putting their business back together and some of their books, that kind of thing. And I made $17,500 because I wanted that experience. Mikey went to work for Ford. He made $25,000. So guess what? We came out of University of Chicago the exact same day. Our first week at University of Chicago, I'm making $18,500 and he's making $28,000. Same job. It had nothing to do with talent. It had nothing to do with anything. It had to do with what we get paid for, placed before. That's why in those days you had to change jobs every 5 years just to get a raise.
Or two years or whatever.
Yeah. I understand that the women have that problem probably worse, but when it's not like you're alone. Absolutely not.
And the question, and we're veering into a completely different topic. The question is, is the equal pay, are you getting equal pay for equal work and equal experience? And
the answer is you never did.
Well, the answer is it was never equal across the board.
No.
But most companies are generally, they're pretty good at that. Now, what profession you choose is going to affect how much you get paid. So if you look at the macro number and say, gee, some professions skew more to women than men, and therefore, and that affects the macro level of pay, then, you know, you're going to get some numbers that are not answering the question properly, because the question is, and we have the law that says this, is legally you have to pay approximately equal for doing the same work.
And at every company,
I know the number is not in the 70s. You know, the percentage is not in the 70s, like is often claimed, on an equal work to equal work pay. Now, is it in the 90s? That's still not, that may not be acceptable, but it's not the 70s of percentages.
Well, the biggest mess up in that, again, we're talking about other stuff, but let's, biggest mess up in that back in the day, Kevin, was that every firm had two things. Talk about the yin and the yang. They had, if you were in this job, you were a grade 6 or whatever the hell it was. And the grade 6 made 18 to 25, say. The next job is a 7. The 7 guys made 22 to 28 or whatever it was. So what would happen is you would bump into, you'd get a promotion into the new grade, in which case, say, you're making 22, and the minimum amount you could make in the new spot was, say, 28. But the maximum raise anybody could get that year was, say, 3%. Firms that I worked for never figured out how to deal with that. So there were all kinds of people that were making less
than... Well, places I worked said that if you got promoted into a new grade and you were below the minimum, you got the minimum. And that's multiple places were like that.
Well, every place, the 3% a year was sacred. But maybe you'd get a little more if they went all the way to the CEO or something, but you were not guaranteed.
No, in most places, Tom, that they had also, they based it on a combination of what your review score was and where you fell in the grade, and there was guidance for that. So if you were at the top of your grade, you got a good review, you were still going to get, you weren't going to see the 3% or the whatever the number was going to be. But on the other hand, that same score, if you were near the bottom of the grade, then you would get a bigger bump.
See, that's why you worked the better places than I did. And the guy went at Pullman. At Pullman, they came down on high and said, you only got 4% raise no matter what. Well, the guys that were getting the COLA were getting 18, but they had COLA. We didn't. But every place I worked, I was like the guy in the commercial. I got screwed. That's why when people say they got screwed in their wages, I'm like, gee, join the party.
Working in places with unions, weren't you?
Yes, I was, but I wasn't a union
guy.
Yeah,
so they had to accommodate that too, because you're right. There were COLA raises, and there were other things negotiated, and that didn't leave as much. For the likes of you.
No, thanks. I know that. S&P futures up 17.75. NASDAQ futures up 66.75. Are we going to hold on to this today or not? We're not sure. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Matt Weber is about to give you the traffic, weather, sports. He's supervising his man, Jack Silverman, today.
It's like riding a bike. Jack's, man, his memory is a lot better than mine.
Jack has always been really good at this. I mean, it's not a really big
surprise.
Usually,
though, it kind of takes, at least 15, 20 minutes to get your bearings on the board and remember where everything is in the software and all that, and he instantly pulled it all up.
Is Jack going to be like a CEO someday? Be like be like Trump or something?
That's why I'm so nice to him, in case I need a job.
Well, that's the truth. Boeing came out. Boeing is trading up $3. I can't... They lost $1.70 versus $1.61. Manny, can you figure this out? First, they stopped all commercial airplane construction. Then they started back up again last week. Now they're saying they're going to slow down. I don't know where that... What does that put them on, foot or horseback someplace? I don't know. Dow down 32.
Well, they were going way down before all of this, as we all know. Yep. So I'm not sure they're the most stable organization right now.
No, and they drew down how many billion dollars? The Fed's giving them dough. I mean, it's pretty scary. I don't know. Plus, who the hell needs a plane now? I mean,
not for a little while.
Not for a while. DAX up 39, FTSE up 52. These are all that's 0.8%. Kekron down 5, call that flat. Over to Asia, these guys were really flat yesterday. They're really flat again today. Nikkei down 12, call that flat. Shanghai up 12.4%. Hang Seng up 67.3. Bonds were at 0.58. Is the 10-year yield. The Bund minus 0.50. Japan minus 0.04, as you can tell. Central banks are pouring yet even more money into the system. Got oil up $1.95 to $14.29. That's good. I guess it's good if you're long. Brent up 98 cents, $21.44. Natural gas, $1.94, which is up quite a bit, actually. RBOB is 69 cents. We've got gold is trading down $1.70. Silver up 16 cents. Matty, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a crash right now on the inbound Eisenhower at Mannheim Road, Chief. That's causing some delays as folks are coming in on I-290. And that's really the only issue on the expressways right now, although we do have rainy conditions throughout the Chicagoland area. So give yourself a little bit of extra time. Your travel times will be a little slower than they've been over the last few weeks. Due to the rainy conditions. Off the expressways, there's a crash out in the western suburbs, Lake Street, just west of 290 at Grand Avenue, which is Route 83. So a relatively busy intersection there out west. There is a crash as well. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, rain on and off throughout the day. Mild temperatures, cooler than yesterday, a high of 55. With rainy and humid conditions all day. Right now it's raining and 54 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and very warm, a high of 105 today as they continue a heat wave in April, which is rare for them down there. Right now it's clear and 75 going up to a high of 105.
Global warming.
On this date in sports history, Chief, April 29th, 1987, you may remember this game. It was the Cubs and the Giants at Wrigley Field, and the Cubs beat the Giants 8-4 in front of just 11,120 fans at Wrigley. But it was a notable date because Andre Dawson hit for the cycle. He went 5-for-5 with a home run and a couple of RBIs. And of course, that was his MVP season, 1987. Even though the Cubs were 76-85 and sixth place in the NL East, had a terrible year, he had a great individual year. 287 batting average, 49 home runs, 137 RBI. Didn't walk very much, only a 328 on base percentage, but MVP for Andre Dawson, and it began early in April with a cycle. Chief.
I'm going to say, without knowing, that was a makeup date for an earlier rainout.
It's very possible. I don't know if Jack can look that up, if they even track that, like that it was a makeup date, but it's very possible because that is a low attendance number. Or it was just horrible April weather. It was one of the two.
Just for people, this is going to be a history lesson for those who are used to being, shall I use the term, screwed by any Major League Baseball, football, you name it, operation, if you're a season ticket holder. The Tribune, not exactly the most philanthropic operation to start with, but if you had Cub tickets, which I did, and say you had season tickets, which actually I split with somebody, in full disclosure.
Still counts.
If the game is rained out on a Tuesday, all right, and you had, granted you were sent the whole thing of tickets, I could take those four tickets from the Tuesday, go to the box office, and get cash. If the game was scheduled 2 weeks later, or the next day, or whatever, I could buy those tickets. I don't think my tickets were even good, Manny. Maybe, I don't think they were, I think I had to buy, well, they weren't, you know, I'm not sure about that, if they were, would have been good or not, but they lost the date. So you got your money back. If you chose to buy the new ones, you could. So they didn't give you the crap like they do now, where you've got a night game, say on a Thursday or a Friday, which they don't really have at Wrigley anyway, Fridays, but, and you have, you invite all these people where all of a sudden they say they're going to make it up the next day at noon, you're supposed to show and use the ticket. They didn't used to
or
do that.
Or 2 months later. Yeah.
So I mean,
usually it's, you know, hey, you might have had big plans with friends and whatnot, and then your game gets rained out. By the way, it's now going to be on a Tuesday afternoon 3 months from now. See you then.
Yeah. So I'm gonna guess.
People are like, what?
Or if it's the first or second game of a doubleheader, if we got to get in and out of the place, you're going to get both games.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess that the season ticket load of the Cubs in 1987. Well, here's another question. There was a time, Matty, I don't even find this date, there was a time when the National League reported people in the park and the American League reported tickets sold. And somewhere, someplace somewhere, maybe Jack can remember, I'm going to say 15 years ago, they unified that and everybody gives you the tickets sold. So you can go to a Cub game and count the people there in one hand and they'll announce 25,000. They used to announce 15, you know, if that's what the number was. So somewhere back in the day, I'm going to say in the last 15 years, the National League went with that.
They gathered the turnstile numbers that quickly?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, my buddy, he hasn't been on the show, but, Leo Breen, his dad was, CFO of the White Sox for years under, Comiskey, and then he was under, Bill Veeck. And Leo would always get one or two of his buddies, and that's what you did. You ran around the third inning and you counted the turnstiles.
Yeah.
And, literally it was a turnstile count.
Right.
But now it's season ticket. So you'll go there and they'll say, you know, total in the park 35,000. You look around and go, really? There are 35,000 fleas in here, little people. But, so what's that going to be now with the COVID?
Oh, about 11,000.
Yeah.
Same thing as 87.
Okay, but that's what I wanted. I wanted to. Interesting how.
But before you get away from that, though, let's throw some trivia out here. Andre Dawson was the MVP of the league. He had the second highest WAR on the team, wins above replacement. Who had the highest?
Is it Rhino? Or Maddox?
Nope.
Maddox, probably.
No.
Wow.
It was Rick Sutcliffe.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
So
wow.
It was, Dawson's was a 4, and, Sutcliffe was a 6.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, how'd you get much better than Andre when he probably got a gold glove that year, too? How'd you get much better than that?
Well, Sutcliffe was a pretty, pretty good pitcher in his time with the Cubs.
Yeah, but that wasn't his 16 and 1 year.
So, no, he was 18 and 10 that year.
Okay.
He was 18 and 10 on a very bad team.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at, you know, as I'm looking at it right now, you know, 18 and 10, he pitched 237 innings for them, so he was a workhorse. And let me see, where's you know, 6 complete games, which, you know, the things had pretty much changed by then away from complete games. He struck out 174, walked 106, but you know, he was really good. And if we look at Sutcliffe's years with the Cubs, so now let me click on that. You know, he had the 84 season that everybody knows, where with the Cubs he was 16-1, but had 20 wins. But then he followed that up. He had 18-10. He had a 16-11 in 89 when they were, you know, when they were division champs again.
How'd they get so lousy in 3 years, then so good again in 2? Well, they had Mike Bielecki.
He was lousy.
No, I'm saying the Cubs. Joe, the Cubs had, they got Mike Bielecki in 89 that had the career year that helped him. He was like 18-9 or something. But in 84,
but yeah, for 84 they were such a good team, and then, you know, 85 through 88 they were kind of, you know, mediocre to bad, and then All of a sudden 89 they were much better again. Obviously, the
in 89 was the emergence of Maddox. You know, that was a big deal for them. And remember, that 84 team had a lot of veterans that they acquired. You know, so you had Matthews, you had Ron Say, you had people. You know, what they had Larry Boa,
Bobby Dunier. They lost all those guys.
Say?
Yeah,
Sandberg was their third baseman.
No. Say it. Say. Was Sandberg?
Oh, Sandberg had moved to second by then.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they had
and Larry Boa. None of those guys played more than another year or two after
Bobby Dernier either. Did they trade him or did he retire?
Who was that?
Bobby Dernier.
Dernier? Yeah, I don't remember what happened to Dernier. But that's discoverable, too.
Yeah.
But if you go to that 89 team, you know, you start to look at just some of the pitching.
We had Mark Grace instead of
Greg Maddux, 119. Sutcliffe, 116. Bilecki, 118. You know, even Scott Sanderson was on the plus side at 11 and 9, which was about the kind of pitcher he was in general. But that's a pretty good fourth starter.
Yeah, that's a good rotation. And then you had the emergence of Grace. You had Dunston. You know, you had Girardi was on the 89 team.
Yeah.
Jerome Walton won Rookie of the Year, I believe, right?
Yeah, Jerome Walton was a hell of a player. And you had still had Mel Hall.
Dwight
right?
Smith.
No, Dwight Smith. You didn't have Mel Hall. You traded him for Sutcliffe.
So I mean, you know, it was kind of an influx of young guys on the 89 team, and then you paired them with some of the veteran guys like Sandberg and Sutcliffe.
Yeah,
and then you had some contributors off the bench too. Lloyd McClendon was, you know, Joe Girardi was their backup catcher.
Is it still Scott Service?
He was later.
He was later. Oh, Jody Davis.
It was Jody Davis was their starter, and then Girardi was starting to play more.
Actually, that year, the most games was Damon Berryhill.
Oh, that's right. Berryhill. Yeah, I forgot about him.
Well, he was a switch hitter. He was a good player.
Yeah, he was a solid catcher.
Yeah, Jody Davis was later. He was like 98. He was when the lights came on. When the lights
came on. That was 88.
88. Yeah. Jody Davis was before Berryhill.
That's right. He was one of the guys who was out slipping on the tarp that they got rid of. Anyway, so
that Cubs team was good in 89. And obviously they ran into Will Clark and the Giants. That's kind of my first real baseball memory is 89. And that Giants team, I hated that team.
What was the earthquake?
But yeah, the earthquake series, Giants and A's. Will Clark just had a monster series against the Cubs in the playoffs. And Grace had a really good series, too.
Yeah, I remember Grace having a big one, too, but it was overshadowed by Will Clark. Yeah.
Well, the thing that I remember was Andre Dawson, who was one of my favorite players, and obviously had that nagging knee injury. In today's world, he would not even have played in that series. Yet every time the Cubs had people on base, he came basically limping up to the plate and didn't do crap. He must have left, I don't know how many people on base. And, you know, for a guy that good, it just was awful to see because he was hurt. He looked like Mickey Mantle, you know, limping up there. Yet he played. Now, today's world, you wouldn't have played. I mean,
He probably would have played in the playoffs. I don't know.
Well, you would have.
They probably would have rested much more in the regular season, so he would have been felt better.
You'd have had a scope in April, you know, or something, and he'd have been okay. Or something like that.
Yeah.
But he got hurt in high school. So what year was that? He played football in high school.
And then they said it really compounded in Montreal on the turf. It really beat up his knees.
And in those days, the turf was just, it was awful, as Wendell Davis of the Bears would attest.
Yes.
You know, different kind, the state of the art for artificial turf was just god-awful.
Just cement with a thin piece of carpet over it, pretty much, right?
When Manny says, I remember some of the weirdest stuff, you know what actually I do remember is I remember when the Astrodome first opened and the Cubs started going down there, they originally... It was supposed to be glass, correct? Well, it was glass. And they thought they could grow grass in there. This is without having it opened up top or anything. Well, it didn't work. Okay, and plus, the glass, you couldn't see in the daytime because the sun came through, you couldn't see the ball. So they ended up painting the inside of the glass. Kick me when I'm wrong here, Kevin. So
now was this 69?
Whatever the Astrodome was built. And the, so of course now the grass is never going to grow because you painted the windows. Correct. So somebody invented, you know, necessity is a mother of invention, this thing called AstroTurf. And I remember Jack Brickhouse in the booth with like a square foot of this stuff. And it looked like very short shag carpeting with maybe 3/8 of an inch of padding. Gonna go right on and they were gonna make the thing concrete and go right on the concrete. And Jack's feeling the thing and he's squeezing it, he's going, man, there's not much padding here. this is before the thing was even put down. But Jack goes, this can't be good, rather than grass for people's knees.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it wasn't like.
I was a little off. They broke ground on the Astrodome in 1962 and it opened in 65.
Yeah, well, as soon as they became the Colt 45s, which was the first name, they were in some field down there. It was so friggin' hot that nobody would play down there. Plus at night, the bugs and everything else was awful. So they said, we need an indoor place. So then they changed the name. You couldn't have the Colt 45s in the Astrodome, so they changed the name of the Astros. They named the Dome before they changed the name of the team.
And of course, the turf, AstroTurf, was developed, as you said, just for that stadium. And eventually people figured out that it was a way to save money. I remember playing on it in high school on that crappy old turf at Gately Stadium on the south side.
Well, there were
a couple of things from a football standpoint that were phenomena. One was that it was really hard. If you took a hard landing on it, that wasn't good. And second is you'd get rug burns from it.
Yeah, how bad were your elbows?
Make sure, whether it was warm or not outside, you had to make sure every inch of your body was covered.
I was going to say, how bad were your elbows if you didn't have cover on those playing football?
Raw.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, the other Marist's home team was Gately Stadium. Maddie was over on the east side. Marist didn't have their own place. I'm going to say starting on Friday night, maybe one, maybe two games Friday night, probably five on Saturday, and another three on Sunday, okay? So if you had any kind of rain, I remember Marist playing a game there, you couldn't have imagined a team more of a field more of a mud bowl than that place. After one, you know, seven games or something on a rainy weekend, you can only imagine what a grass field was like in those days. I mean, the grass fields today with the drainage and all that stuff, you might have a fighting chance, but still not what, you know, five and six games a weekend. So when they went to the artificial turf, I'm going to say, Kevin, as bad as that was, it probably was an uptick.
Oh, I remember because they put it down when I was in high school, and I remember a game against Catholic League. It was a Catholic League. It must have been playoffs, not the Catholic League. It might have been the Catholic League championship. I don't remember, but this game against Mendel was just a total mud bowl.
Oh, yeah.
The only score, Loyola won it 8-0. They returned a punt for a touchdown. They ran a reverse on the return. Got a touchdown, and that was the only touchdown of the game because nobody could move the ball in the mud.
What was the movie?
I love that. Call the reverse on the turn, and it wins the game. That's a coach winning a game right there.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I remember St. Rita.
Well, the coach, our head coach at the time, and you might recognize the name, was a guy named Bob Spoo.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he passed away not too long ago. But he was for a long time he was the offensive coordinator at Purdue. So he was there when they had, you know, Jim Everett, Mark Herman, guys like that on their team. And he was the offensive coordinator for several head coaches there. Then he went to Eastern Illinois, and I'm thinking for like 20 years he was their coach there.
And he
he's the guy that gave us, what's our guy at New Orleans, the head coach at New Orleans?
Sean Payton.
On his name.
Yeah, Sean Payton.
Sean Payton played for him. I think Romo played for him. It seems to me that there's another one out there.
I think Mike Shanahan played for him was affiliated with him somehow, Mike Shanahan. I think even Garoppolo at the very beginning.
I think Garoppolo had a couple of years before he retired.
Yeah.
Playing for him, so yeah, that's another one. And of course, Ryan Pace played there too.
He had something really going at Eastern Illinois to get that level of talent at that school playing football.
He was a really good coach, and that's the way I remember it in high school too. He was a really, really good coach, a good leader. Good with our age group as a motivator, and not always likable. I can still remember a few. Mount Bob Spoo blowing.
Yeah.
But by the same token, you know, so he didn't put up with any BS from anybody, but he also, you know, was really good at really just focusing on, you know, being outstanding. Be really good at what you do and let the wins and losses fall however they do. And during my time that included a 19-game winning streak that finally the Dennis Lick and Billy Merrick team broke in the playoffs when I was a junior, some championships, city championships. Back then there were no state playoffs, but the Public League and Catholic League would play their champions for a city championship. It's just a really, really good coach.
Remember when my cousins played at St. Rita? They had some real bleep for a coach, but he was a hell of a coach. A guy named Buckley ended up working for Hank Stram at Kansas City, but the guy was, he was, shall we say, availing himself of the players' mothers, and and he'd go right from the practice field to the bar, you know, and he'd get drunk. I mean, it was a bad dude, but the guy knew his football. But they had this unbelievable team, so they got to play St. Ignatius at one of these stadiums out somewhere, and it's raining. So I've never seen this play since, Kevin, and I don't even know if it's legal, but first play of the game, the quarterback was back at St. Ignatius, and all of a sudden he looks to the right, and he wings the ball downfield, and there's this guy there all by himself. They did the old, you know, one guy comes on the field and two people go off, and the one guy just hangs by the sideline. He wasn't really a sub. Remember that? I mean, was that?
Well, yeah, no, essentially a trick play,
yeah.
But I think they've basically made that illegal now.
I think it has been, because yeah. I haven't seen it in 50 years. I mean, because with all the substitution now, you'd think it would be a gimme one time a game.
Well, and now the defense is allowed to match your substitution or something like that. So to literally try to avoid any plays like that where you trick them based on subs.
Yeah, they brought in like three guys and four guys went out and one guy didn't go all the way out. But they still lost like 40-6 because St. Rita was a great team and now they were pissed off. But Kevin, we were talking earlier, to kind of finish our thought from earlier, that it is interesting how you can tell when people make, even the people on CNBC, which are supposed to know this stuff, they make these determinations. And I mean, I don't know if you listened to Jeff yesterday, the idea that, oh, what's going to change in the restaurant business? Well, God, everybody's going to be 6 feet apart. Whoa. If anybody understands the economics of restaurants, as crowded as they are now, the leases have reached a point where they're lucky to make any money now. If you say half the people go in there, the guy can't even open. He's going to make more money.
Yeah, I've been told 75% occupancy you have to have to break even.
Yeah. Our restaurant buddy, I won't say his first name because he's been on the show. You know, he has a real nice place by us, and he's got his Italian place further north. And he tells me that it used to be that if your lease, you know, maybe people own the building and whatever, used to be you looked at the plate and what you were getting and what you charged, and you saw if that thing was legit. I mean, some guys in Pullman went to work at Scott Ladd, and the deal was the thing on your plate. If you order a steak for $20, the steak should cost the place $8, and then your potato and all the other stuff. So whatever you're eating should be 40-45% of what you're paying. And that, anybody looks at the numbers now, that's not even close to what it is. It's more probably 5 or 6 to 1 now. Because it has really nothing to do with what you eat. It has to do with the lease and the phone bill, or not the phone, but the gas bill and the taxes and everything else. I mean, you could walk in, if you walk in a restaurant, and I'm sure your brother would say this, give me $75 a person, I'll feed you and drink you all night long.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what you eat or drink. Well, I mean, if you're starting drinking Louis Trey or something, yeah, but Al will say that if four people come in and sit down and they have one bottle of wine or two bottles of wine, one appetizer per the table, and dinner, I break even. If they have a dessert, I make money. If they have a drink in addition to a wine, I make money, or an after dinner drink. But he goes, if it's $35 a person, I'm dead break even. And if it's 40 or 42, then I make money. And so the idea of having half those people, so what are you going to do? Double the prices? I mean, it's people that we don't even.
Well, you're going to have to double the prices just to cover all the extra dollars that are chasing around the economy anyway. So
yeah, well, that's, you know,
that won't work.
You know, the weird part
that's
is
a good point.
Is I've tongue in cheek, laughingly, on the show said a bunch of times, always take whatever people are doing or whatever, and extend it out for your decision making process. Extend it out the whole way. In other words, when I used to do spreads on the trading floor, there was only two computers for the whole place. I have to write down on the computers all the deltas and all the other stuff on the options. I mean, that's how I learned. That's why I don't even really need a machine. But then again, nobody learns that way anymore. So I would always say, okay, what if the stock went to 500? Is this a good spread or a bad spread? I would always say stuff like that. Well, and I would tongue in cheek would say, well, if the Fed just doubled the money supply, would we be twice as wealthy? I mean, literally, you walk into the Fed, give me your $1 bills and walk out with twos. No, all it would mean is, everything would double in price. If you owed somebody $20, now you owe them $40. But that's what would happen. That's what happens with inflation. And I always thought, I'm just kidding, and nobody knows what I'm talking about anyway. We're talking about the money supply now, Kevin, going up 20%. So we're a fifth of the way there this year. It's not a joke anymore. And yet everybody thinks it's okay. I mean, what do they think that these guys are doing?
Well, again, they're making decisions for this week that we're going to have to live down next month.
Yeah. Let's talk about more of this on Friday. I'm glad we're talking about some sports. Well, high school football, that was really, it was God in those days, wasn't it? I mean, in the city, for sure.
Oh, yeah, and you know, as a Catholic leaguer, yeah, we played on Sundays.
Yeah.
So we had high school sports to ourselves, and the Bears weren't always on TV.
No.
So, yeah, it was cool times.
Kevin, yeah, thank you. SP Futures now up 1550. As if you're up 64, so we're leaking back a little bit. Still up. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? Have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Something happened.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. We have Jack Silverman back on the board, doing great. First, Jack, it's like you never left, for God's sake. You never missed a beat. Matt Weber's winding around here someplace. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes on the phone, and we also have S&P Futures up 1675. NASDAQ Futures up 63. Now, yesterday at the show at this time, we're up like 30 or something in the S&P, and we're up 120, maybe 28 in the S&P, up 28 in the NASDAQ, 128. The day wore on, we finished the day down 120-something in NASDAQ, so a 250-point swing, and we ended up down in the S&P as well. Now, today we're trying to make another move up. We have Boeing came out with earnings a little worse than people thought, down $1.70 versus $1.60. Stock, however, is up $5.10. We're not exactly sure why that is, but we have all kinds of stuff going on. Russell, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I have some questions about your hero and buddy, Munchkin, this morning, and about the
what did he do?
The new morality of the world. Everybody went and got these loans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if you heard the part where I was just telling Kevin that I used to joke about what if the money supply doubled and how everything would just have to be adjusted, right? If I owed you $20, now I owe you $40, and although I'd like to say I still owed you $20, I don't think you'd let me get away with that. And I always thought that was a big joke, but now money supply is going up 20%, so it's a fifth of that. So it's
mm-hmm.
And
so everything's going up 20% in price.
I'm going to say at some point here, probably.
Okay.
Maybe not.
I think it'll work. It's
maybe not so much because some of it'll go back to the Fed because there's no place for it in the banking system, really.
Yeah. So that's you caught my first point that I was going
to
throw out.
Yeah. So
there.
Some of it's going to go back to the Fed, so it won't be an actual 20. It might be 12, but even so, when the economy's going negative, that's an awful lot more than the growth, right?
Mm-hmm.
But my question is that for years, you and I, and even we've debated it a little bit, for years as we watched all the bleep holes overseas, who I still think should be in jail, that dodge their taxes by doing this overseas stuff, right? Okay, all my Starbucks earnings from my 48,000 stores in London, a little exaggeration there, really is in like Amsterdam where I don't have any stores. You know, that type of thing. Wait a minute. But the morals forever were, you were supposed to take advantage of everything you could tax-wise, and the law read what the law read, and not what anybody meant maybe when they put it together. And clearly if somebody was able to carve out a loophole in court, you got to avail yourself of that loophole. And that's been our business morals like forever. They don't match mine at all, right? And I've had a problem with it for as long as I've been on this earth. But anyway, that's been the story, and I've been the moral loser on that one. Now, all of a sudden, we go to the Fed, and we're looking for these loans, right? For this, whatever this thing is.
Yeah.
And now Munchkin, or whatever you want to call him, comes out yesterday and says, we put our faith, we knew it was a bad law, because it was put together so quickly, that the people should have had the morals to say that they really shouldn't have gotten this and not applied for them.
Like the LA Lakers shouldn't have popped up and said, hey, we qualify for this. Let's go get it. That's one of the people that got some money out of this.
But on the same token, Russell, I've never once, well, like I said, I'll tell people because I have full disclosure, I had age-dependent children when I grew up because my dad died young. Okay, so, mm-hmm. But I've never gotten a nickel that I know of from the government, right? I mean,
right.
So, I mean, I've never applied for anything like that. I never got no largesse, no tax dodge that anybody else ever got. And I always kind of didn't like, you know, the people who kind of applied for stuff that they didn't really, quote, deserve. But now I feel so totally different about this thing. And it's not like, I want anybody to do anything immoral because it's not, because the law is written kind of whatever. And, I'll go to maybe a saloon buddy of mine and I'll say, by the way, did you apply for this thing? Well, you know, we've been getting by with carry outs so we'd at least be able to pay the rent. And I go, wait a minute, what are you thinking about? And he's like, what do you mean? I can get by. I don't need money from
someone. I'm doing okay. Why would I ask?
Yeah, why would I? I said, you don't understand. I mean, and this, God, Russell, you know me long enough. This is so not me. I said, you don't understand. What's happening around you with this money and with the taxes and with everything, this has all got to get paid back someday. And it's going on your ledger. It's going on the Russell ledger at the state.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're due this 20 grand, maybe you don't need it. Maybe in a perfect world, you wouldn't even be able to apply for it. But the law says you can. If you don't go get it a year from now, when your taxes double, everybody else will be in business except you. My advice is for you to go get it, save it. And when they come down on you like a ton of bricks, at least you got it, and you can stay in business when other people can't. Because right now, if you don't stay even with people, if there's 15 saloons in the neighborhood and 14 apply for it and you don't, it's not a question of morals at this point. I mean, I never dreamed I would say that. Because it's
and you know what you just said turns around and applies to all the really big companies.
Right.
It really does.
Yeah.
If Apple, you know, let's just say that, you know, Apple and Samsung, they're, you know, the two big phone makers, I believe. If Apple's not doing things that allows them to continue to price the new iPhone in line with the new Galaxy, they're going to go out of business. Might not necessarily go out of business, but their business is going to get hurt.
Well, even the tax crap, even the tax crap I was talking about, Russell.
Yeah.
If you're in the pharmaceutical business, as big a crooks as those people are, and three or four of them leak overseas to where they're paying taxes in Bermuda or not paying them,
and all paying much less.
Yeah, and paying way less than you are, and all of a sudden some company comes up for bid, and of course we're all buying out the guys that actually make the drugs now, and they can bid $40 million, and you can only bid 30 because they paid $10 million less in taxes. You got if that's the game now that's defined. You didn't define
then
it.
It's funny because I teach this at Loyola, and I've had students push back on me to the point of where you and I have talked about it on this show, where you know I'll talk about, you know, reducing taxes is something that you as a company should try to do, and you know I've had these younger mind pods who, you know, think that don't have the same attitude toward government that I do, and they're like, well, why is paying taxes so bad? The government does a lot of good with that money, and I'm like, oh my god. But yeah, you know, the argument that you that just kind of got formulated in the first 10 minutes of the segment, that's something I haven't thrown out there before, but I will, because I had never thought about it from that perspective.
Well, it's even on the trading floor. I was always and this is a true story, Russell. I was chairman of the, well, I don't forget what the name of the damn thing was. Essentially, it was the DPM committee, right? And Bill Flores put me in that spot. Now, why did he put me there as an index trader? Because we had two or three big things to negotiate that year: how much of a trade somebody got and something else. Now, why do you suppose me, who didn't even trade an equity crowd, was there?
Okay.
Because I was there because no matter what, no matter how many, nobody didn't like what, you know, where it looked like I was going in a meeting, I could never be accused by anybody. Plus, people liked me for a while, and they knew I was straight. They could never accuse me of having an axe to grind. They knew I was an index trader, and I didn't give a crap. So I wanted it just to be right.
Yeah.
And you know what? Bill says, I gotta have you there. I said, Bill, I hate it. All we do is argue. and it doesn't even get me anywhere. He goes, that's why you're good for it. I mean, okay. But you know what? He was right. I mean, it's like, you know.
Yeah. I know Bill, so I can totally see that.
Oh, Bill, I love Bill. He's the nicest guy.
Oh, Bill was one of the best.
I'm gonna say.
We talk about him in the past tense. Bill is one of the best. How's that?
I'm gonna say him not getting the chairmanship job at the CBOE is one of the signature bleep ups in this industry, and this whole industry would be different had he got that job, and better for it. Way better for it. Just saying.
Oh, yeah, he navigated. You could almost think of him as being like a wartime president, everything that he navigated through over it.
We would not have three people making all the money in the industry if he'd have been that chairman. That would not have happened. One of the reasons it wouldn't happen is because I would have been his right-hand man. The two of us would have fought pretty hard against it. Wouldn't say we'd have won, but Put it this way, yeah. The other guys would have known they were in a fight.
Yeah.
So, anywho, yeah. What do you make of what the Fed is? I just it's weird. If I was going to get a check, Russell, I looked at the debt clock yesterday. All it's doing is putting another $1,000 on what you owe somebody. What is going to happen when your buddy McConnell got excoriated about the bankruptcy thing with the state? What do people think is going to happen when the check comes to them from the state and you go to the currency exchange and it bounces?
When we completely run out of money?
We are out of money.
I'm assuming that the next big step is going to be the federal government bailing out a couple of states.
This guy's never going to bail out.
And we are at the very, very top of that list.
We're on the bottom of Trump's list because we voted against him.
I know, but we are at the very top of the list of something that's going to have to be done. You know, and
okay,
which is just extremely worrisome.
Right? Does that mean the money?
As far as being somebody that's kind of due to life circumstances stuck here for at least 5 years, it scares the. That's probably if I had to make a list of my top worries in life, which generally your top worries should be things you don't have any control over. It's what ends up happening financially to the state that I live in right now, and the direct impact that it may have upon me.
I'm going to say that the impact against you is not going to be pretty, but it's not going to be anywhere near as bad as the poor guy who lives in Park Forest in the $56,000 house is laid off, whose tax bill is going to go from 5 to 9.
Oh, yeah. And it's not going to be pretty for me, but I'm going to leave.
Well,
there's one of my counterparts who kind of does. We both have very. There are a handful of us that have very similar career paths where we're used to trade. Now we you know educate about it or run a fund or whatever. And one of the smarter guys that I deal with on a almost daily basis, he's moving to Texas this summer. And he's got small kids, and that decision was made before all of this happened.
Well,
house hunting down there back in October, November.
Your buddy Pritzker is banking all of this on his new taxes for quote rich people. What's that?
Yeah, name? We're all leaving, man. Well, that sounded so arrogant when I said that. Those of us that do particularly well that have skills that we can transfer elsewhere, we're going to be transferring them elsewhere.
Well, what's the number going to be?
End of story. I mean, that's what we do on the weekend in the Rhodes household. We look at, you know, we're looking all over North Carolina over the weekend for the heck of it.
Well, you just had a soldier up in Lake Geneva. Don't go up there because all the houses are being snapped up.
Up in Lake Geneva?
Yeah.
Well, that's another thing. So we get rid of the place in Lake Geneva, we get rid of the place in Chicago, and we go.
Yeah, but, you know, the weird part is this is what I... The more I, you obviously are an economics professor.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I see somebody, the things that aggravate me, there's a lot of stuff it does, but the stuff that really aggravates me is when somebody, essentially, that we pay his salary, right? Say we, the public, and they're supposed to be this economist or they're supposed to be, and it turns out they either are lying through their teeth or they're half-assed economists where they obviously don't put this together. It's somewhere or another. And it's not like if you moved to Indiana or Texas, you're not going to get smacked with the same paddle. I mean, you are. You're just hoping you're not going to get smacked as hard. I mean, it's not like
it's not so much the paddle I'm going to get smacked with, regardless of where I live. It's what's being done with the money.
Well, anybody who thinks that's
the bigger concern.
But in deference to your friend... Okay, he was moving to Texas. The reason why, when the rest of the world in the 2007 fiasco with the house prices going up and everything, the reason why Texas didn't have that much of a fall down like other states, is because they never had them run up because the oil firms were in a mini depression on their own, and house here it was 230, it was always 130 down there. So I'm not so sure that your friend fleeing to Texas, giving the carnage in the oil industry, is the right direction.
They're a little bit more diversified than they used to be, but it's really about how do they spend the money down there. And I think they do a much better job of, you know, managing the state than we do here.
I think they do too, yeah.
You know, I mean, we've got, and God love them for the jobs that they've done, but we have, you know, lifelong educators in the suburbs out here who retired as principal, you know, or retired as, you know, the principal at a school that are getting $350,000 a year in pension.
Well, you know, in California.
I know how that happens because I used to be on a school board. The system is set up where the school boards, the municipalities, don't have to worry about the pension part. It's the state's responsibility.
Right. And the state's broke.
So they pass the buck onto the state and they rig the final. They rig people's last 3 years of salary. They like give them like a maximum raise for the last 3 years so that it helps their pension out.
Well, in California, it wouldn't be the direction I would head either.
No.
This can't be right, but I've read it in like three different places, but it should be easy enough to check. Allegedly, who would you guess the biggest voting bloc is in California?
The biggest voting bloc in California?
Yeah.
Probably, what, state employees?
Well, I mean, I would have said teachers.
Uh-huh.
It's
just because the reason I say it that way with California is because, you know, in Illinois we have the teacher retirement system, we have some other, you know, we have different pension systems. In California they have one that covers all the employees.
Okay, well they have CalPERS.
Yeah, CalPERS.
But they have, I read this and again, I absolutely convinced it isn't right. But they claim it's the prison guards because they had that three and out law. They got like 90 bazillion people in jail. California did have. I'm a prison guard, you know, is it a tough job? Well, I'm sure it is, depending on what prison you're in. Yeah, I mean, it depends on the prison, obviously, but any of them can't be good. Those guys, from what I understand, they retire after 20 years. Okay, so let me get this straight. The guy gets a job when he's 25. He gets fired he retires when he's 45.
He lives
to be 95. So you pay somebody for 70 years for 20 years' work. I don't even have to find a pencil or a pen to realize that's not going to work for the rest. I mean, how the hell are people going to pay for that? I don't even. The guy could be Saint Prison Guard, but I mean, the numbers just don't work unless somehow, someplace. But I mean, I just. But on a federal level, where's it going to go, though? I mean, if the Fed bails out the state, okay, Russell, and all of a sudden now it becomes a federal debt, well, you can go to Puerto Rico. You still got to pay income tax. It's going to come at you from there. So, I mean, it's going to come at you. The question is which direction.
Somebody's going to have to pay for it from somewhere, period.
And I don't know that you dodge it. I think, you know, you have to have the biggest unit I know. But I could get a 12 flat on the Isle of Man or on Gibraltar. And if I got you a big enough place, you'd be in there.
And I don't really need a big place.
Well, you got to have a balcony. You got a little nicer than everybody else, I know. You have a balcony.
No, I just need... All I care about is I care about one little room with my computer, my big comfortable chair, and my dog, and walking distance to the train. Otherwise, I could care less where I live.
Yeah, you don't even... Well, there are no trains. Where are you going to go, on the Isle of Man or Gibraltar?
Well, I'm just talking about in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
If it's Isle of Man or there, I just need to be able to walk to the two or three different places I need to go periodically.
Well, I know you need to...
I'm a simple man.
Even though you don't drink, you're going to have to be in walking distance to a bar because you got to go talk to people.
That's exactly right.
Doesn't matter whether you drink or not.
And a local coffee shop, because I won't go to Starbucks again either.
Why is that?
The way that they've treated police officers.
What do they do to them?
There was an instance where one Starbucks, they wrote the word pig on coffees that were for the police officers. And then there was another instance where police officers showed up at a Starbucks and they completely ignored them and nobody would serve them until they left. I just don't have to shop there anymore.
Every place that I've worked, the what do you call it, the drinks were always free for policemen.
Or discount. Yeah, I worked at one bar where it was discounted for policemen.
Like we were charging for the food, but drinks were always free.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can't...
So,
just
things they've done. They did the thing in Philadelphia where they kicked out the guys that were waiting for a couple other guys and hadn't bought coffee yet. I just think Starbucks doesn't treat people right. So I won't go there anymore.
I doubt if the guy who runs Starbucks would put pig on them. I mean, you got that many employees, how do you control them all?
Yeah. Well, you know, if that's the type of people that are working there, I don't have to go there.
What's your
if I don't like that Nike pays a guy that I don't agree with his politics for, you know, being an endorsement guy, I won't buy anything from Nike or Converse ever again. I get to make that choice.
See, you just led yourself.
Where did I leave myself?
As you know, one of my themes on this virus. Is everybody mm-hmm. everybody bitches at Trump and the governors and our people who are asleep at the switch at the CDC in places for 4 or 5 weeks. Not asleep necessarily. Individual people recognize the issue, but the bureaucracies couldn't talk to each other for 4 or 5 weeks. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah.
Because I don't think individual people fumbled it. Individual people never usually do, but
I think it was a systemic thing.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
just like 9/11 kind of got fumbled because different departments had different pieces of information and they didn't play well together.
Well,
I think there's the same situation here.
Well, my theme, as you well know, has been, okay, who's really to blame on the 6 weeks we lost? And I'm going to say that in this, and I've said it before, I'm going to say in this day and age, and now all of a sudden my people that are listeners are picking up on what I'm saying and are sending me stuff that maybe only makes me even more angry. my thought was, 400,000 people flew back and forth to China since November when China knew they had a problem.
Uh-huh.
And we have people, I think Apple's got some suppliers in Wuhan province. I was trying to get through the list yesterday. And we got people there. I don't think, I mean, and we have business people here that were flying people into an area they knew had a problem. Their own employees. And Trump,
yeah.
And Trump shut down the travel to China for Chinese people. But by that time, our own people were just as dangerous. Now, you got to bring them back, but you also could have quarantined them. We didn't. But anyway, so one of our listeners, actually contributors yesterday, sent me, he goes, Chief, if you really feel that way, how about Starbucks? They have stores all over the place. Didn't they realize that their people in Wuhan were getting sick? Did they tell? Did the guy call up Trump and say, hey, put me through to the president. I know you're just starting to talk about this thing, but I tell you what, whatever you're hearing from the Center of Disease Control and the idiots at the WHO, the World Health Organization, this is 10 times worse than it. Did any of our guys do anything to help this out? And we had another guy who listens from Australia every day. He says that the chairman of Qantas made $23 million last year. He's flying sick people back and forth to China without a problem, not even taking their temperature, for God's sake. I mean, is there any culpability for these people? They had to know more than the people at the WHO.
They had to have an idea that people were getting sick.
Yeah.
I gotta think on that one. I really gotta think hard on that one. I can go both ways on that one.
Well, I'll tell you what. I would never, if I thought there was a problem over there and you were my CFO, I wouldn't say, Russell, get your fanny over there and then tell me how the books are in Wuhan. I surely hope I wouldn't.
You hope you would not send me to Wuhan or wherever the outbreak happens to be. But, you know, I mean, they had the outbreak going on, and initially they were telling us that that we couldn't get it from other people, that we could only get it, you know, if we happened to go to the wet market. And there was so much misinformation, intentional misinformation out of the country where this whole thing started, that I have a hard time blaming anybody outside of China that may have done anything before, at least before the beginning of this year.
I will bet you.
You know,
I'll bet you.
November. November, December. It didn't really seem like it was that big of a deal, and they claimed that it was only something that people had gotten from eating, you know, things that I don't really think we should be eating. And
I'll bet you $1, Randolph. Well, $2 now, the way inflation is. So yes, yeah,
$1 is now $2.
$1 is now $2. $1, Randolph, that if you were to take a look at the 3 or 4 weeks in November, the drop-off in sales at the Starbucks there, it would be dramatic. And if you call up and said, what's going on, they would say, oh, our people are dead. Hmm. Just saying.
Well, I'm sure there's a real... You know, the way that you used to really keep up with what was going on over in China was you paid attention to Yum Brand, because they had all the... They had all the Pizza Huts over and KFCs over in China, and then they split them off into two companies, and it was impossible to know if the numbers were real or anymore, or not anymore out of the China part.
We got to go to break, but you do know there's more pictures of the Colonel over here than there are of Mao.
Of course there are.
Russell, will be right back, buddy. SP Futures up 28, NASDAQ Futures up 101. We're bouncing higher here. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, Innovation in Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Matt Weber is here. We also have Mr. Jay Silverman here. We also have Mr. Russell Rhodes. And I don't know, Russell, did we miss enough on break here? For God's sake. We went to break. Spoos were up 20. Then they shot up 48. And positive data from the new Gilead trial. This is like the drug, it works not type of thing. And all of a sudden then we came out with the GDP. Shrank 4.8% in the first quarter versus 3.5% decline expected, so now we're up 36. So we flew up 28, and now we're up 15. So we're kind of like right in the middle of that. This is sort of crazy. Anyway, Dow's up, is up to like 340. It was up 450 during break. It's all just during break. DAX up 44.4%. Now this is all a little bit delayed here. FTSE up 57, it's a full 1%. CAC around. I'm going to say the CAC around. We're not getting a feed on that one. Because it's just happened. Nikkei, however, that stays down 12 because they're closed. That's flat. Shanghai up 12.4%. Hang Seng up 67.3%. Bonds, 0.59. That's below. That's lower. Bund minus 0.49. Japan minus 0.04. Oil, we've got up 225 now to 14.59. So that's pretty good for those people in there. Inventories reportedly rise less than expected. I thought they were full, but anyway, it's better news out of there. Brent up $1.20. Natural gas $1.93. RBOB is 69 cents. Russell here. Gas in Wisconsin can be had for like $1.15. Wow. Gold up $1.50. Silver up 16 cents. What do you guys got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning, everybody. We are looking pretty good on the traffic standpoint currently. We only have two accidents to report right now. One on Lakeshore Drive. North before 47th Street, and then one on the Stevenson a little bit further out west. We have a accident, or not an accident, but it's closed on Cass Ave between I-55 Joliet Road North and 75th Street due to downed power lines. For weather, we're in Chicago, we're not looking all too great right now. It's a little bit muggy out with a lot of rain. Supposedly rain's going to continue all day, and currently 52 degrees, high of 54. In Phoenix, for all of the Phoenix listeners, it's going to be a bit of a nicer day. Currently 75, clear and sunny, with a high of 105. And I've already mentioned, but today in sports, on this day in sports, 1987, Chicago Cub Andre Dawson hit for the cycle, went 5-for-5 in his MVP winning season. Chief.
The cycle's a big deal.
Absolutely.
Pretty hard to get.
Huge deal.
Yeah. Hey, Russell, what do you
especially,
make of...
Especially for an old man with bad knees.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What do you make of what happened on break here, bud?
What happened on break?
Gilead...
Everything went... We solved the coronavirus thing, but personal consumption and GDP was down a bunch in the first quarter.
Yes. Horrible. So, effect. So what do you make of that?
You know what? 4.8% isn't too bad. Well, I mean, goodness gracious, I haven't left the house since, you know, the last 3 weeks of the first quarter. The second quarter is going to be really ugly. Because that's the one where, you know, you're going to have a majority of the day shut down. A lot of people don't recall that basically 10 of the 13 weeks of the first quarter, we basically were open.
Yeah.
We didn't really start to shut down until the middle of March. So
St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. Heaven. And, you know, that, I mean, right there, that's 5% of annual GDP for Chicago.
That's right. For every bar, for sure.
Yeah.
Russell, and the, I was mentioning yesterday, this reminds me of Bizarro World, you know, the comic when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
I just got a text from one of our contributors. You know what's happening? Out of all this mess, I'm sitting there looking at this thing. I just hope this isn't a joke because I'm telling everybody about it. We've just approved. Get a load of this. The U.S. government approved on September 6, 2013. Not just approved. The U.S. government approved Shanghai International Holdings purchase of Smithfield Foods.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were a little worried about that. I can remember the big debate around that one.
Yeah,
about, you know, are we going to allow them to have control over, you know, our a big portion of what could be considered an important part of our economy, making food.
Well, they had the head of the FTC on yesterday, and if I was a president who spent 6 hours of my day watching TV, like maybe we have one now, and I saw this guy's interview, I would have called up and said, please have your resignation on my desk. All he did was talk about the idea of a ban on M&A during this as being ridiculous and how important the M&A world is, and I'm going, take a look at what's happening out there. What, how many, with the government picking winners and losers, the last thing you need to do right now is make it easy for the winners to pick off the losers and never come back. Or is that just me? I mean, I, you know, whatever. So I guess the we have plenty.
Look, I want to stick with Smithfield real quick.
Yeah.
If you go to their website, it's very difficult to see that they're owned by China. They actually, you know, if you go to Smithfield Foods, it says basically what made and processed in the USA. Says U.S. based. It's all this kind of stuff. It's all about it being a U.S. company, even though they're not owned by, even though they're owned by WH Group out of China. You think that's Wuhan Group?
I don't know. So what do you make of two things from your professorial standpoint? We have this idea. Obviously, we're seeing it this morning with the Gilead test. That and there were a bunch of guys on TV yesterday talking about it. I don't know, and they were not. They won't be asked on again because they were not all that optimistic. And my question is, how far in the hole? If all of a sudden today everything was okay. Right, go back to having parties, that kind of thing. Go out and try and pick up girls and those things. Don't be afraid to be 4 feet away, unless she punches you, type of thing. What the? Where are we in the recovery process? I think we're unfortunately, and I hope I'm wrong. I think we're way deeper in the hole than our people give us. I mean, the fight out in this world of just in time inventories and everything. It's going to take us a real long time for factories to open up because the supply chains have been decimated.
You don't think we can just flip a switch?
No.
I know we can't just flip a switch.
Yeah, I mean, I know we are American.
I totally
make things
agree
happen,
with you.
But I don't I think that we've gotten so interconnected internally, not even overseas, that I think we have a problem. I mean, the idea, I mean, when Trump was talking about, let's open up a factory in northern Wisconsin, my first thought was, who the hell are they going to sell it to?
Well, and where, you know, what if we, you know, what if Wisconsin reopens manufacturing, but, I'm trying to think of a hard hit state, but I don't know, Michigan doesn't.
Right.
And 30% of the Wisconsin components come from Michigan. Are they, they're one of those big, trucks that goes through northern Indiana and drops things off in Wisconsin and turns around and goes, gets more stuff.
Yeah,
there's going to be. And it's even worse if you're talking about foreign countries where, you know, if they shut things down and if they flip the switch, it takes 2 weeks for stuff to get made there and then get over here.
Well, there has to be stuff that
it's,
is in the...
It's going to be difficult for things to get completely up and running quickly. I think it takes months. I think we're back to... If we declare this thing defeated today, I don't see us back into normal on track until at least the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. But I hope we'd be a little better, but I don't.
No, I think we're. I think 6 months to come. You know, to back to normal. It's kind of like you could almost equate it to the way that the stock market behaves. It sells off really hard, and then it takes months to work its way back to a new high. I think it'd be almost the exact same thing with the economy.
What about, you're in the school area, and some people, I mean, obviously, you know, I should be careful with this because a lot of people are very dedicated, I know, but for God's sake, I mean, there's people in Illinois that they don't ever want to go back to work. They want to stay home. And I mean, do you think the the ward office wants to really go to work and deal with people, and they can stay home and get paid. I mean, obviously staying home isn't all that much fun now because you can't go anywhere, but.
Right, but you're still getting paid.
You're still getting paid.
It's like a staycation.
Yeah, well yeah.
Except it's not for teachers. I'll tell you, teachers are having, we have weekly meetings with at Loyola, and there's some professors that do very well with the online, and there's some professors that don't. I'm fortunate that, you know, I used to do webcam. I do things like this. I'm comfortable talking to you like we're here face-to-face.
Right.
Some of the professors are really struggling with this. Some of my kids' teachers are doing great with this. Some of my kids' teachers are struggling with this. You know, I've got a seventh grader and a ninth grader. So I think there's some teachers that would probably like to get back to work, and there's some that are kind of enjoying a little bit more flexibility around what the way they're able to work right now. I kind of like the flexibility.
Well, I think for you, I mean, you're not on the extreme end as Kevin, because Kevin is always, when he taught classes in any one of his places, there were always three or four other campuses part of the class.
And he was doing the thing, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, he was, there was always part of the deal with him, you know, so for those guys, it's a one step. But now my mother's cousin's wife in Ohio, she says when she calls home, mothers are screaming at the kids. The kids are screaming back. Nobody's doing their homework.
Oh.
I mean, she says it's part of it, and this is, it sounds awful to say, but part of it is you're taking the kid from the home, especially in bad neighborhoods, and you have them for 6 hours where they're going to eat properly. They're going to be learning.
I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
This is more sociological than it is, or at least as much as it is educational.
Mm-hmm.
And you got no computers in those homes, or you got four kids and one computer. I mean, one of the guys was saying the other day, he called me up and he says, in our area, the teachers used to leave home at 7 o'clock, get home at 5 or 4:30, mm-hmm. and now they're on the line from 9 to 11:30 in an hour in the afternoon. I mean, they don't want to go back to work. I mean, who's kidding who? I mean, he says the assistant principals and all the indirect people, I'll use the term, they're all getting paid. They're not doing anything. I mean, what's the school nurse doing now? I mean, I'm sure there's something.
That's a good question. Probably not a whole lot.
Yeah.
No, they're beneficiaries and they're non-beneficiaries across the board with this whole thing. I can actually see it in the quality of the work. There's some students that, I've given four tests. I gave two in person, two online so far. And you could see a drop off with, you could see a drop off with two or three of the kids. That this just wasn't working for them particularly well, especially ones that are in different time zones. And when I say different time zones, I mean Asia or Europe, which I have students in. I actually have students in four continents now.
So when you guys close, you
are doing classes.
When you guys close, you send people back to Europe, basically, right?
We did. We sent. I've got Dubai, Israel, Spain. I had 20 students from Spain.
Wow.
And I have three in mainland China.
Wow.
Costa Rica.
Well, good for you.
I have two or three from Costa Rica.
It's I just think people are somewhat. You learn more from the quote experience. Now everybody's going to try and find a way. I mean, I heard a couple people at university saying, well, we should do like way more of this. And first of all, my first question is, if I was on an interview with him, I'd say, do whatever you want, buddy, but you're not getting 70 grand for this crap.
That's, that really is a, I think not having the in-person experience is justification for people asking about, asking for a tuition reduction. I'll give you the other side of this. We actually, I was talking to a couple of other professors at Loyola, and there's been some concern that we're going to see a drop off in enrollment going into the fall. I actually think that schools that are in cities like Chicago are going to benefit from this thing. If one of my kids was a senior and she was deciding between, and actually this is, in her little list of schools, she was deciding between Northwestern and Duke. We're going to push her to Northwestern next year because she's just down the road.
Yeah.
I have a funny feeling that like, you know, a school like Champaign might get hurt, but DePaul, UIC, Loyola are going to be okay with this thing, because you'll have people that either they're still going to have their kid go live somewhere near campus, but they want them closer to home, or do like me, live at home and go to school. It's not the end of the world, you know, and it's cheaper.
I did that for grad school. Yeah, it was a lot cheaper. My question for you, and now do not speak about your place. Everybody knows you're a professor there. Let's take my place, for instance, Notre Dame. Not my place anymore, but where it was a lot of years ago.
Yeah.
All right, so they boot me out. Actually, they didn't boot people out. They said, we're gonna close the place, but if you have nowhere to go, you can stay in like one dorm. So they actually were civil about it.
Yeah.
So say they use the term, they boot me out in March. They're supposedly these online classes. Well, of course, guess what? I'm a aerospace engineer. I'm a chemist. Well, okay. What happens to my labs? Now, they're going to muddle along and say, if I'm an economics guy, that my semester is, quote, complete, and they're going to give me a grade, so they're going to say, nothing lost, except I wasn't there, and oh, by the way, I paid $8,000 for my room and board the second semester. Am I going to get half my room and board back? Am I getting nothing back? What am I getting back?
My understanding is people aren't getting a good portion of room and board back. I've got I'll use my nephew who went to one of the schools in Boston. Not like Harvard, but was at a school in Boston, and he got a refund of a room and board that he did not use while he was there.
Well, he wasn't
there. The cafeteria stuff that you prepay and things like that, they did do that.
Okay, so what the person who they can't give the guy the chemistry semester and say it was the same as a.
I don't know how you would do something like that. In fact, I'm trying to find out, because we actually have a situation where there are some classes that you have to have access to the Bloomberg lab, and you can't get access to it unless you physically go there.
That's why he's got so much money.
I'm still trying to figure out how we would do that in the fall if we don't come back together, because I'm teaching one of those classes.
Call Bloomberg, but now he's broke because he spent so much money. He's going to charge even more.
He ain't broke. Oh, my God, he is not broke.
Well, tell him your story.
You know what? That's like me dropping a $5 bill on the ground and not worrying about it.
You'd worry about it.
I probably would. But no, really, you know.
Well, you think he would lighten up?
That was his. The value of that company, if they IPO'd, is mind-boggling.
For those people who don't know, if you get this Bloomberg terminal, they used to give you the terminal. You could be the Pope, and you had to be at the terminal. You wouldn't let you move it.
Yeah.
Now, some guys figured out how to access it from home on the QT, but. Not very many, I don't think. And
it doesn't work well when you do that. I've done that. You're not really paying for it.
Yeah.
But now you do, if you pay extra, you do have a Bloomberg anywhere. But, you know, that's not something that academic people have get hold of. So, Bloombergs are everywhere, and they've almost become essential. It's essential to my job now. Trying to figure out when they'll let me back in that building. And they cost pretty much around $2,000 a month.
Now, why is it so essential for you, the professor?
It's not essential for me, the professor. It is essential for me, the head of research and consulting for EQ derivatives.
Okay. I get that. All right, fair enough.
I got it. Yeah. That's for my day job.
Well,
you always call me a professor, but
see,
I don't use them. I also have a... another thing that I do.
Well, I don't need them because I have, I'm mostly in the stocks and options, but if I was ever in fixed income or anything, I'd have to have one.
Mm-hmm.
Those other markets, if you don't have a Bloomberg, you're pretty much bleep out of luck.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, if I was going to do, I don't think I can get munis and stuff up on my stuff here. I mean, we can through RBC, I mean, Dan can, but I mean, for sure, if that was our business, we'd have to have a Bloomberg or two. Right?
I'm doing the math right now, and they do $7.8 billion a year in revenues for the Bloombergs that are outstanding.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
There's 325,000 of them at about $24,000 a year. They're doing $7.8 billion just for that part.
All right, so if you are in the quarter system, mm-hmm. you damn near lost a quarter here. Right? There's no way you can. I guess you could try and you would have had the entire quarter at home.
Yeah.
All right. So now, come September, if we're in sort of half-ass lockdown or whatever you want to call it, how many people go to school here from China? Is it 400,000 or some number?
We had this discussion yesterday. It's a lot fewer than it used to be.
Well, we used to be meaning like 6 months ago or 2 years ago?
Like before the current president.
That I could get, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a 50% reduction.
So we were over 400, weren't we?
Yeah.
And now we're 250? Or would be? I bet we wouldn't even be 250 come September.
Well, if they can't come back, which I don't think many of them will be able to. And then you got to figure, they have to pay the full price for coming over here.
What's the state of Illinois going
to
do?
If the economy is decimated and you've got a college-age kid that you're thinking about sending to the U.S., you probably got to put that off for a year.
So what's the state of Illinois going to do? They had so many of those people because that's where their bread and butter was.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They are much more reliant on it. I can tell you that I actually am taking over the Master of Science in Finance program on July 1st at Loyola. And right now we only have 25 students enrolled in it. It's a pretty niche thing. Five of the 25 are from outside the U.S.
All right, but
there's a similar program down in Champaign that I guest lecture at every year. They only have 50 students in each cohort, and 46 or 47 are from China.
All right, don't take this wrong, but you guys don't count.
Why don't we count? Because we're not actively recruiting over there, or?
No, you see, now I got you to jump to that, thinking I was going to say something bad about you.
Well, no, why don't we account?
Because you don't have two-tiered pricing. If you take...
I don't know if we do or not.
Officially, you don't. You do. You
okay? No, I honestly don't know if we do.
I'll help you. You don't.
Okay.
Officially.
All right. Okay.
Know what I'm saying?
There's certain administrative things about the university. You know what? I don't even know what it costs to go to Loyola.
I could tell you, but anyway,
I know. Yeah, and you could tell me how it's gone up by per year for the last 5 years.
20 years.
Too.
20
You're
years.
On that.
Yes. No, but I'm saying. Let me explain. You guys. I mean, if I had a kid, if my kid wanted to go there, they're liable to give him or her some help, especially if she could play volleyball or he could play
volleyball.
So I'm saying there's different tiers of pricing. But you don't have the state school where Illinois is 20 grand in-state, 40 out-of-state.
Right.
You don't have that. So there's no incentive for Loyola, money-wise, to let somebody in from China. If they let somebody in, they just want the kid, right? They're not paying any more than the kid from Naperville. So all the private schools, Notre Dame's the same way, DePaul's the same way. But University of Illinois, Ohio State, if you look at Ohio State, I mean, I have people that work at these admissions offices that I know. They'll tell you, my cousin has been involved in Ohio State forever. He went to school there. All my mother's cousins did. All their kids did. He goes, if you could chew gum and walk across campus, you're in Ohio State. Well, now, Ohio State takes all the kids from Michigan they possibly can, because they pay full bore. Meanwhile, the Michigan guys are picking up the kids from Ohio State because they play full bore. Why do you think it's so easy for a kid in Illinois to get into Wisconsin and not Illinois? I mean, so...
Oh, because they pay way more.
They
save money.
But now, you guys are Notre Dame or whatever, you have one number. Now, I'm not saying you don't hudge the number by giving somebody some aid, but at least you're not... There's not an official two-tier system. You know who's got a two-tier system? This will floor you, if I didn't tell you this before.
Who?
Like Richard J. Daley Junior College?
Oh, what do they have? City people and non-city people?
No, out of state.
Oh, out of state? Wow.
Where Jen Flanagan taught? Is it Prairie State down in where the hell it is? They charge anybody comes there from Indiana, it's like $4,000 more or $6,000. It's unbelievable.
Well, but they get subsidized by the state, so.
Well. They'll tell you they're giving you a discount. Really, they're giving the other guy a premium, I think is what the story is. Just saying.
I like it.
S&P futures now 54, Nasdaq futures up 170. A lot of it has to do with this Gilead. Now all of a sudden the drug works, they claim. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.